again.
Asha. Donovan! Coach barked. Get your ass in here! He disappeared back inside his office. I ignored the team's heckling and finished pulling my shirt over my head. That's getting old, I said, giving Elliot a light shove as I walked toward Coach's office. Find a new stick. We'll find a new stick when you stop getting in trouble, Elliot snickered. How many times have you been called into Coach's office this season? And it's only November. New betting pool, Adil shouted. 50 quid says Donovan gets called in there at least 2 more times before the holidays. I shook my head as the rest of the team rushed to place their bets. Idiots. However, I couldn't summon true annoyance toward them. It had been 2 weeks since Scarlett and I got back together, and I hadn't been able to stop grinning since. I owed the team for their help, even if their help simply involved taking my cars off my hands and driving them to RAB. So I let their good-natured taunt slide. I entered Coach's office for what felt like the umpteenth time that season and waited for him to speak. My injuries were fully healed, and I was training with the rest of the team on the pitch again, but I was still benched. Unfortunately, it was harder to convince Coach I changed than it was Scarlett. I doubted telling him I loved him and snogging him in front of the team would help. Coach's eyes slitted like he could hear my thoughts, and he was not happy about them.
So, he said. I heard you got back together with your girlfriend.
My mouth fell open before I snapped it shut again. Of all the topics I thought he'd want to discuss, my love life wasn't one of them. Not to mention, how the hell did he know about me and Scarlett?
My daughter is friends with your girlfriend, Coach said, answering my unspoken question. She talks. So do they.
He jerked his chin toward the door. His face crumpled with a scowl.
Can't tell whether I'm running a team of professional athletes or an episode of bloody Gossip Girl at times.
Add Coach knowing what Gossip Girl was to the second shocker of the day. Yes, Scarlett and I are back together, sir, I said, unsure where this was leading.
Does she know what an idiot she's dating?
Yes, sir, and she loves me anyway. Coach's mouth twitched in the closest approximation of a smile I've seen from him since his hat trick in 1995. When he noticed my answering smile, his expression morphed back into a scowl.
I also heard you gave away your fancy car collection.
Most of it, sir, except for one. I'd retrieved the Jaguar from a protesting Vincent the day after Scarlett and I made up. He pelted me with all sorts of English and French swear words, but he eventually gave up the keys with an angry grumble. I was helping Scarlett plan a big birthday party for him next month, so hopefully that made up for it.
You sad about it? Coach asked.
I shook my head. The cars were material things. I loved them, but I don't need them anymore. I was working through my lingering guilt over Teddy's death with Miles, the club psychologist. However, just knowing the reason behind why I acted the way I did helped me curb my worst impulses. My emotions still got the better of me sometimes, but I didn't vent them by punching someone or speeding in a supercar. It was progress. Coach grunted in reluctant approval.
You've worked hard in training, even while you were injured.
He examined me, his eyes shrewd.
What are your thoughts on Saturday's match?
I grimaced. Over the weekend, Blackcastle lost its second consecutive match. It had been a home match, which stung even more. We were strong in the first half, but the attack line lagged in the second half, I said honestly. We weren't as aggressive as we should have been, and our hesitation cost us at least one goal. Coach grunted again.
You've been a headache for me since you joined the team, Donovan, and I've seen your face in my office more times than I care to count. If I really wanted to teach you a lesson, I'd keep you benched through the holidays and into the new year. I don't give a damn what the public says.
I swallowed, my blood going cold at his words. I understand.
However, he leaned forward and tented his hands beneath his chin. You and Dubois are finally acting like adults toward each other. You've demonstrated a concrete willingness to listen and change and, While he obviously can't share details, Miles says you're making good progress in your sessions. So I am inclined to think that maybe you've already learned your lesson. My heart sped up, but I maintained a neutral expression while I waited for him to finish. I didn't want to jinx anything. I'm putting you back in for next week's match. Consider it a trial. We'll see where we go from there. Coach scowled. However, if you so much as get a speeding ticket under my watch, you're going straight back to the bench. Am I clear? Overwhelming relief rushed into every cell of my body. I'm fucking back. I couldn't wait to tell Scarlett and the team. Yes, sir. My grin could have powered the entirety of Markovich Stadium on its own. You won't regret it. I promise.
Chapter 54. Scarlet. The night of the Winter Student Showcase dawned bright and cold. My coat warded off the worst of the chill, but a gust of wind snuck past the layers of wool to claw at my bones anyway. I shivered, half grateful and half apprehensive that we would be inside soon. I hadn't told Emma I was coming. I wanted it to be a surprise, but I was second-guessing my appearance with every step. Asher's gloved hand squeezed mine.
You ready?
He asked, his voice quiet. I took a deep breath and nodded. As ready as I'll ever be. We were already here. It was too late to turn back. Nevertheless, the air evacuated from my lungs when we turned the corner and Westbury's famous neoclassical facade burst into view. It loomed ahead, its grand columns and ornate gilding illuminated by the soft glow of neighboring lampposts. The marble steps teemed with people dressed in suits and gowns, and several professional photographers snapped pictures of the arriving attendees like it was a red carpet event. For RAB, it was a red carpet event. Most attendees were friends and family of the students, but there were also alumni and dance company representatives present. The school made a limited number of tickets available to the public, and those were snatched up by true ballet aficionados. It was going to be a spectacular night, if I could get past the rattle of nerves in my chest.
Breathe,
Asher said as we approached the steps.
We can leave any time you want.
This time, I was the one who squeezed his hand in silent thanks. We're not leaving. My resolve pushed past the nerves and hardened into determination. We came here for Emma, and we're staying for her. After several lengthy discussions, I became Emma's official mentor last month. I'd never mentored anyone before, but I loved my new role. Teaching students dance techniques was one thing, guiding them in their career was another. The latter was so much more fulfilling than I expected, and I wanted to see her perform live. She'd worked so hard for the role. I didn't want to be so weak and selfish that I wouldn't even try to set aside my own hang-ups to support her on the biggest night of her career so far. So here I was, mouth dry and heart racing as Asher showed our tickets to the staff. Several people did a double take when they saw him, but they were polite enough to keep a respectful distance and we entered the theatre with no issues. Thankfully, we didn't have to deal with the paps hounding us anymore either. After weeks of endless coverage and clickbait articles, they finally got bored and moved on to the messy movie star divorce Brooklyn predicted earlier in the fall. They still popped up now and then because Asher was Asher, but compared to the circus of our early days, we were enjoying relative peace.
I've never been here before.
Asher sounded impressed as he took in our opulent surroundings.
It's beautiful.
My throat clogged at the familiar sweep of marble stairs and soaring windows. It is, I said softly. It hasn't changed at all. He glanced at me, his gaze assessing. He didn't condescend me by asking if I was okay, but I could feel his concern as we walked up the stairs toward the main auditorium. Surprisingly, I really was okay. I thought walking through the halls of Westbury again would be overwhelming, but other than my initial shock of nerves and nostalgia, I felt nothing except anticipation for Emma's performance. For years, I'd built the theatre up to be this monstrous symbol of my old life, but it was just a building. The small man to the great Wizard of Oz of my imagination. The only power it held was what I gave it. and I'd reconciled with my past enough to not give it any power at all. In another lifetime, I'd be backstage right now, preparing for another performance as the star of the show. Tonight, I was merely one of hundreds of attendees who'd shown up to support the next generation of dancers. And I was more than okay with that.
Asher, is that you?
Our heads turned at the same time. A beautiful redhead approached us in the hall with a tall, handsome Asian man in tow. Her face split into a wide smile.
It is you. I haven't seen you in ages. How are you?
She hugged Asher and turned to me, her eyes sparkling with mischief.
And you, the girl who snagged the infamous Asher Donovan. It's nice to finally meet you in person.
I smiled back and returned the sentiment. We'd only just met, but she exuded an infectious energy that was impossible to resist. Asher laughed.
Scarlett, this is Jules, an old friend of mine.
And this is Josh, my boyfriend, Jules added, gesturing at the man beside her.
It's great to meet you.
Josh gave me a warm smile that revealed a devastating set of dimples. However, his smile visibly cooled when he glanced at Asher.
Donovan.
Asher looked like he was trying not to laugh.
Josh, always a pleasure.
We were on our way to our seats when I spotted you. I told him it was you, but he insisted it wasn't. See?
Jules elbowed Josh in the side.
I was right.
You were.
He didn't sound particularly thrilled.
Josh slid an arm around Jules' waist and glared at Asher while we chatted during our wait for curtains up. It turned out the American couple was on holiday from DC. Asher met them at Queen Bridget's wedding a couple of years ago. I still couldn't believe he'd been a guest at the royal wedding of the century, and they'd kept in touch since. Well, he and Jules kept in touch. I could tell by Josh's scowl that he was not an Asher fan. Jules was a lawyer, and a London member of her firm had a daughter who was performing in the showcase. He'd bought tickets for every employee who wanted to attend, including those who were visiting from out of town.
I've never been to a ballet, so I figured why not? Jules shrugged. Anyway, it looks like the show's about to start, so I don't want to keep you any longer. I just wanted to say hi.
She lowered her voice. And Asher, I heard about your situation from our litigation team. I know I don't practice that area of law, but if you need help, let me know anyway. She raised her voice to normal volume again.
Enjoy the show. It was great running into you.
We said our goodbyes, and I waited until they were out of earshot before I arched an eyebrow at a sheepish-looking Asher.
What situation was she talking about?
He placed his hand on the small of my back and guided me toward our seats in the front row.
I was going to tell you later, but I finally found out who vandalized my car.
He admitted.
It wasn't Bachi or anyone from Holchester. It was Clive.
I stopped dead in my tracks.
What? Clive as in the rugby player? The one I went on a date with?
Asher nodded.
Ivy called to tell me last week. Apparently they rekindled their relationship after our double date. She heard about the car incident from Poppy, who heard about it from one of the players. She stumbled on a bunch of pictures Clive took of my car after he keyed it. The idiot was dumb enough to leave incriminating evidence lying around. He wanted a trophy, I guess.
He shook his head.
She asked him about it, and he confessed. His ego still couldn't get over the fact that I beat him during last summer's race, though admittedly I hadn't been too gracious a winner at the time.
My head spun as we resumed walking again.
That's wild.
Clive had seemed so nice when I met him at Neon, though he'd raised several red flags during our date. I hadn't talked to him since then, so finding out he was the culprit behind the vandalization was a shock.
Did you confront him?
Almost.
A muscle ticked in Asher's jaw.
I thought about it, but it wasn't worth the trouble. The car is fixed, I survived the crash, and Ivy broke up with him over what he did. I did consult with my lawyers, which was how Jules found out about it. But I don't want a legal battle. Karma will take care of him.
A wicked smile stole across his lips.
I did see that he lost his last three rugby matches. Took quite a hit during the last one too, and is out for the foreseeable future with a broken leg. So, karma works fast.
Asher Donovan taking the high road, I teased. You really have grown.
We didn't get a chance to talk more before Emma's parents showed up.
Our seats were next to theirs, and they showered us with effusive greetings when they saw us.
Glad to have you at Blackcastle, by the way,
Emma's father said, shaking Asher's hand.
I've been a fan of yours even when you were at Holchester. I think this year is our year.
Asher smiled.
I think so too.
We quieted as the lights dimmed and the show started. Emma's eyes lit up when she saw me, but that was all the reaction she allowed herself before she sank fully into the role of Sugarplum Fairy. As I predicted, she nailed her performance. When she glided across the stage, the picture of serene grace, I didn't feel a single ounce of envy, only pride and the liberating peace that came with laying the ghosts of my past to rest at last. In the week leading up to the staff showcase, I hoped that, like Westbury, it would prove less daunting than I imagined. So far, I was conflicted. The performance took place exactly 1 week after the student one. The backstage area was a zoo as everyone scrambled to finish prepping, and judging by the noise that seeped through the thick velvet curtains, it was a full house tonight.
How are you feeling?
Tamara asked. She sounded calm, but the pinch in her brow betrayed her nerves. Not too bad. I smoothed a hand over my costume and tried to steady the wild patter of my heartbeat. I can't believe it's here.
It does sneak up on you, doesn't it? She smiled.
You've been great during rehearsal, so don't worry. Everything will be fine. Neither of us mentioned my disastrous first rehearsal. That was in the past, and we'd come a long way since then. Thank you, I said, for everything. She'd been hard on me during the first rehearsal. But since then, she'd gone above and beyond to accommodate my needs. If it weren't for her, the past few months would have been torturous.
Don't get sentimental on me,
Tamara said crisply, but there was a small twinkle in her eyes. If you really want to thank me, go out there and show them how it's done.
I'll try. I mean, I will, I amended.
Good. Another dancer called her away soon after, and I waited until she left before I braved a peek around the curtain. My heart trembled at the size of the crowd packing the auditorium, but it gradually steadied as more and more familiar faces came into view. I spotted Asher, front and center with Vincent, Karina, Brooklyn, and my parents, who sat on either end of the row so they could avoid talking to each other. My father had fully recovered from his injury over the summer, and he'd brought his ex-home nurse as his date. That had to rankle my mother, who'd shown up solo. I'd bet my last quid she'd take up with some studly young gardener to spite my father within the next month. Emma and her parents sat in the row behind them, a twitter with excitement. There were even a few Blackcastle players sprinkled throughout the audience, including Noah, Adil, Samson, and Gallagher. I inhaled a deep breath and allowed myself a moment to take it all in, the lights, the people, the ripple of anticipation coursing through the air. This wasn't my dazzling star turn as a promising young ingenue. My performance wouldn't be reviewed in The Guardian or have an encore at Westbury the following night. I would never be that dancer again, and for the first time since my accident, I was at peace with it. That chapter of my life had closed, but this time I could close it on my own terms. All right, everyone. Tamara clapped to get our attention. 5 minutes till showtime.
This is it. Nerves fluttered through me. 4 minutes.
The air took on a surreal, hazy quality. After months of rehearsals, anxieties, and self-doubt, it was hard to believe the moment had arrived.
3 minutes?
I pictured the people waiting on the other side of the curtain. There were strangers, yes, but there were also people there for me. People who loved me, supported me, and would never judge me, no matter how well or how poorly I performed. They were my rocks, and thinking about them quelled some of my nerves.
2 minutes.
A strange calm descended as everyone settled into their places. Of course, I wanted to dazzle on stage, but at the end of the night, it wasn't about the perfect performance. It was about the fact that I was here at all. For years, I'd avoided participating in the showcase because I was scared I wouldn't live up to who I used to be. I'd finally faced those fears and learned to appreciate my body in all its forms. I had to scratch and claw my way toward this moment, but I made it. I was here, and that was an accomplishment in and of itself.
1 minute.
That being said, I wouldn't be me if I didn't pour my heart out on that stage. This performance was my swan song, and I was going to try my damn hardest to do it the justice it deserved. The remainder of my nerves dissolved into a soft smile. Showtime. The curtains rose, the music started, and I danced.
Chapter 55. Asha. 2 months later.
Since it's our 6 month anniversary, I could technically make you tell me where we're going,
Scarlet said.
I'll say it's my anniversary gift. You can't deny me that, can you?
Nice try, darling. But if you waste your gift asking me about the surprise, you won't get the surprise itself, I said, amused. And trust me, you'll want the surprise.
This is torture,
she grumbled, but I heard the curiosity in her voice, even if I couldn't see it in her eyes. I'd secured a silk blindfold over them before we left my house, and remained steadfast against her attempts to make me crack. I hadn't spent months planning tonight's date to ruin it at the last minute. Our footsteps echoed against the marble floors as I guided her through the entryway and up the lift. Our destination was on the third floor, and I wasn't going to risk taking her up 3 flights of stairs when she was blindfolded.
Ooh, a lift.
Scarlet perked up at the sound of the doors sliding closed.
So we're probably not going to a restaurant unless it's one of the ones in the Shard or something. Are we in a hotel, museum, Harrods?
I stifled a laugh. None of the above. Stop trying to guess, darling. You won't get it.
Well, now I take that as a challenge.
Of course she would. Her competitiveness was one of the things I loved about her. But, as predicted, Scarlet couldn't guess correctly before we arrived. I wouldn't have either if I were in her shoes. It wasn't a place most people could access, and if Sebastian hadn't helped, I couldn't have pulled this off. You can stop guessing. I grinned and placed a hand on the small of her back, bringing her to a halt in front of a set of arched double doors. We're here. A thread of nerves wove through my anticipation as I removed her blindfold and slipped it into my pocket. Tonight was a big night. It had been 6 months since our date in Tokyo, when we'd agreed to make our relationship official, and I'd taken a risk by adding a little flair to the traditional anniversary dinner. But the greater the risk, the greater the reward, and Scarlet deserved something more special than just a fancy dinner. Scarlet blinked, her eyes presumably adjusting to the light after nearly an hour of being blindfolded. She glanced around the marble hall with its museum-quality paintings and priceless antique vases. Despite its opulence, it gave no hint as to the purpose or location of the building.
Where are we?
She asked, her face a mosaic of confusion and intrigue. My nerves sparked brighter as I reached for the gilded handles and opened the double doors. I stepped aside so she could enter, and my grin returned at her audible intake of breath. Scarlet, I said, welcome to the Valhalla Club Library. The Valhalla Club was an ultra-exclusive society for the world's wealthiest and most powerful. It had chapters in every major city, and its London branch occupied one of the most splendid mansions in all of England. Every room looked like it belonged in Buckingham Palace, but the library was the most magnificent of them all. I walked in after Scarlet and let the doors close with a quiet whoosh behind us. It was my second visit. The first had been when Sebastian brought me for a walkthrough of the space so I could plan tonight's date, but the interior never failed to awe me. Soaring 3 stories to a massive, elaborately painted ceiling, the library was a wonderland of golden frescoes and leather-bound books. Crystal chandeliers cast the room in amber-hued light, and the main floor featured 7 alcoves that separated the library's impressive collection by category. A sweeping staircase spiraled up to the 2nd and 3rd floors, its steps cushioned with the same rich emerald carpet as the rest of the room. Beside me, Scarlet took it all in with visible awe.
This is the most beautiful room I've ever seen,
she breathed.
How did you...
Sebastian is a member, and he was happy to do me a favor, especially after Blackcastle's recent wins. The Laurent heir belonged to the New York branch, but as a descendant of one of Valhalla's founding families, he held more sway than many of its other members. But the library isn't the surprise. It's who's here. I took her hand and pulled her toward one of the 7 alcoves. Her brow furrowed in obvious confusion as to why I would invite a third party to our anniversary night.
Who's?
A sentence trailed off again when we reached the alcove, and she saw who was inside.
No.
Scarlet stopped dead in her tracks.
Asher, you didn't.
Relief and amusement washed away the remnants of my nerves at her stunned expression. You've always wanted to meet her. I figured tonight would be a good time, especially since you just released a new book. Inside the alcove, a striking woman with purple-black hair paused her conversation with her partner and rose from her seat behind a small table. A pile of books was stacked neatly on its polished surface.
Hi!
Her smile dazzled.
You must be Scarlet. I'm Isabella. Are you a hugger? I'm a hugger.
Scarlet made a strangled noise when Isabella Valencia, her favorite author, came around the table to greet her with a big hug.
Asher tells me it's your 6-month anniversary.
Isabella pulled back, her eyes sparkling.
Congratulations, it's a big milestone. Yes.
Scarlet finally found her voice.
Hi, I'm a big fan. I loved your latest book. Oh, I'm glad. Thank you so much.
Isabella's smile widened with genuine warmth.
Before we get to the signing, I want you to meet Kai, my fiancé.
She winked at her partner, who stood next to the table with a wry smile. He and Scarlet exchanged greetings before Scarlet's gaze coasted to the stack of books on the table.
Wait, signing?
I took over explaining. Isabella hasn't done a UK tour yet, but I figured a personal meet and greet would be more fun than standing in line for hours anyway. I gestured at the books. I had special editions made of all her titles, so she could sign them for you in person. I'd found a printer who could bind personal copies in hardcover with all the bells and whistles, foiling, fancy formatting, and a bunch of other features that went over my head, but that the printer insisted Scarlet would love. Judging by the glossy sheen that brightened Scarlet's eyes, he'd been right. She opened her mouth, but nothing came out.
When Asher emailed me about doing this, it was a no-brainer,
Isabella said, rescuing Scarlet from her speechlessness.
I didn't care that I had to fly here from New York. His idea was the most romantic thing I've ever heard.
Behind her, Kai frowned, looking insulted.
Come.
Isabella hooked her arm through Scarlet's and led her to the table.
Let's get these books signed for you so you can enjoy the rest of your anniversary night with Asher. Which story is your favorite so far?
While the women chatted, I went and stood next to Kai. We'd never interacted before, but I recognized him from various news stories as Kai Young, the CEO of a major media conglomerate. They own dozens of news outlets in the UK, including Match and Sports UK. It's great of you to accompany Isabella here, I said in an attempt to make conversation. My team would have taken good care of her, but I think it's lovely that you took the time to come with her. Not a lot of billionaire chief executives would take time away from work to join their fiancé for a personal book signing. Most of them wouldn't do that for a full book tour. I'd offered to pay for Isabella's entire trip to London, but she insisted that wasn't necessary, since Kai owned a house in the city anyway. Yes, well, she's my fiancé. His tone was polite, but he placed an oddly aggressive emphasis on the last word. I'm always happy to support her. My other attempts to start a nice chat also failed, so I eventually fell into silence and contented myself with watching Scarlet. My mouth tipped up at her excitement as she talked to Isabella. She'd lost her earlier shyness and was gushing about a plot twist in one of the author's earlier works, her face bright with animation. When the signing finished and Isabella hugged her again, I thought Scarlet would dissolve into a cloud of sparkles and smiles. It made my fucking heart sing. We hadn't officially exchanged gifts yet, though the special edition books were my anniversary presents to her. But she didn't even need to give me anything. Seeing her that happy had already made my night.
I know this is going to sound tacky, but before we leave, do you mind if I get a photo and a few autographs?
Isabella asked me, her tone apologetic.
My friends and I are big fans, and they'd kill me if I came back without your signature.
Kai's frown deepened. Of course, it's the least I could do, I said easily.
Great. Kai, can you take the pictures?
She shoved her phone at her fiancé.
I'd love one with Scarlet, too.
I signed a few pages in her notebook for her, and we took turns grouping up for the photos. Me with Isabella, then Scarlet with Isabella, followed by one of the three of us together. Isabella also insisted on taking photos of me and Scarlet to document our night. Kai did the honors.
I heard he was quite nice and gentlemanly compared to other CEOs, but he didn't look very nice and gentlemanly to me. He looked like he wanted to roast me alive, especially during my photo with Isabella, the one she'd asked for. Jesus, what had I ever done to him? Fortunately, I made it through the photo session intact, and Isabella and Kai left after wishing us happy anniversary again. The library doors closed, and Scarlett and I were alone once more.
I can't believe you set up a private signing with Isabella Valencia.
Scarlett still looked dazed from the encounter.
How long did it take you to plan this?
About 2.5 months. I didn't have to work too hard to convince her. Like she said, she was happy to do it.
Lucky she's your fan.
Scarlett teased.
Though I don't think I can say the same for Kai. He kept glaring at you for some reason.
Maybe he's not a Black Castle supporter, I shrugged. Though apparently I don't poll well amongst engaged or married men between the ages of 25 and 50. I'm not sure why.
Their loss.
She twined her arms around my neck.
I think you're pretty great.
Pretty great.
Exceptionally great.
She amended.
Better?
Much. I gave her a soft kiss. Happy anniversary, darling.
Happy anniversary.
She sighed dreamily against my mouth.
I could stay here forever. This library is the stuff of dreams.
Our dinner reservations aren't for another hour. I'd booked us a private room at Valhalla's on-site restaurant. But I can think of a few ways to pass that time. My mouth moved to the delicate shell of her ear, without leaving the library. Scarlett's breath quickened.
Here?
She squeaked, clearly picking up on the suggestiveness of my tone.
What if someone comes in?
They won't. The library is reserved for us tonight. I gave her earlobe a gentle nip before my voice hardened. Now turn around, bend over, and spread your legs. The air flickered, throwing our light-hearted teasing into the dark, murky waters of lust. Scarlett's face flushed, but she obeyed without protest. A visible shiver ran through her body as she bent over the table and parted her legs. Her arm brushed the stack of freshly signed books, which I relocated to a nearby couch before grabbing one of the throw pillows. I tucked the pillow beneath her hips and leaned forward, covering her body with mine. "Do you trust me?" She nodded, but her shallow breaths morphed into a hitch of surprise when I retrieved the blindfold from my pocket and slowly slipped it over her eyes again. A low whine escaped her throat when I stood and stepped back. "Shh," I murmured. "I'll take care of you soon." I pushed her dress up around her hips, my nostrils flaring in appreciation at her visible arousal. I skimmed my fingers over the lust-dampened silk, just lightly enough to make her squirm and whine again. She pushed her hips back at me in an obvious bid for more friction, but I held firm and let myself explore leisurely for another minute, despite the growing tightness in my trousers. We had time, and I wanted to savor this moment. It wasn't just about the sex. It was about the fact that she trusted me enough to let go, to hand over the reins of control and let me take us where I wanted because she knew I would never hurt her. Her trust was more intoxicating than any sexual act. That being said, when I initiate something, I always see it through.
"Please,"
Scarlett panted.
"No more teasing."
"I thought you liked my teasing." I traced my fingers over the lace edge of her underwear and chuckled at her adorable little growl of frustration.
"Sir Donovan, if you don't... oh, fuck."
Her words cut off with a gasp and a swear when I yanked her underwear down with a sharp tug and pushed a finger inside her. She was already so wet, it was like sliding through silk. And when I worked a second finger into her, she barely resisted. Instead, her hips bucked, and a loud moan fell out when I reached around with my other hand and pressed my thumb against her clit. The sight, sound, smell of her sent a shock of heat through my system as I built up a rhythm. The air swirled with the heady sweetness of her arousal, and my cock throbbed with painful need. My heavy breaths mixed with her moans and the filthy, slippery sound of my fingers thrusting in and out. I kept my thumb on her clit while I finger-fucked her from behind, faster and deeper, drawing her moans out into cries that lit up every nerve ending of my body. The blindfold and temporary loss of one of her senses must have heightened the pleasure for her because her muscles went rigid only a few minutes in. Her pants deepened, and I could tell she was on the brink of orgasming when I pulled my hand away from her. Scarlett's hoarse sound of protest died at the sound of my zipper sliding down and the crinkle of foil. By the time I rolled the condom over my eager, aching cock, she tensed again, her body practically quivering with anticipation. I nudged her entrance with the tip of my cock. "Hold on to the desk," I ordered. She did as I asked, her fingers curling around the edge just in time for me to bury myself inside her with one hard thrust. She moaned again as I bent over her and braced my hands against the desk on either side of her. "How hard do you want me to fuck you, Scarlett?" My soft question belied the insistent, insatiable heat gathered at the base of my spine. I wanted to pound into her and hear her scream, to see her claw at the desk and come apart around my cock, but I wanted to hear her say it first. My lips grazed her cheek, and I felt a shiver ripple through her body. She didn't answer, but she let out a whimper when my hand came up to grasp her chin. "How hard?" I repeated.
"Hard,"
she whispered, her cheeks heating beneath my mouth. "I can't hear you, darling." I pushed myself a little deeper inside her, no more than a centimeter, but it was enough to make her hips buck again.
"Hard."
Her knuckles whitened.
"I want you to fuck me hard, please."
The last word came out as a sob. I groaned. God, I could never say no to, nor get enough of her. I released her chin, braced my hand against the desk again, and fucked her exactly the way she wanted. Hard and rough, my balls slapping against her skin with every thrust, her screams and moans driving me faster, deeper, until she came with a half cry, half sob. Her cunt rippled, squeezing and releasing my cock in a way that pulled a blinding orgasm out of me mere seconds later. My vision whitened, and the world devolved into pure static beneath an exquisite, almost agonizing wave of pleasure. Scarlett and I lay there, panting, until our breaths returned to normal and I could move my limbs again. I removed her blindfold, helped her up, and cleaned us both with the handkerchief I brought with me. I tossed the used condom and soiled cloth into the box the special edition books had been delivered in, and made a mental note to place the entire box in the trash before we left. When I finished, I caught a glimpse of Scarlett's deep blush before she buried her face in my chest.
"I can't go to dinner like this,"
she said, her voice muffled.
"I look..."
"Like you've been fucked thoroughly." I chuckled when she lifted her head to glare at me, the color of her cheeks deepening from pale rose to beet red.
"Asha."
"You still look beautiful. You're just a little more ruffled." I smoothed a strand of hair back from her forehead. "If it makes you feel better, I booked us a private room. No one will be looking at us."
"Except the servers."
"I'm sure they've seen worse. And we can clean up before dinner. The spa here has showers and toiletries we can use." Her jaw dropped.
"Seriously? Why didn't you lead with that?"
"Because you were too adorable when you thought I was going to make you walk into the restaurant smelling like sex."
"You're diabolical."
But her words lacked heat, and her eyes shone with so much love, it arrowed straight into my chest.
"I'll let it slide this time, since you gave me a private signing with Isabella Valencia and an orgasm. This might be the best anniversary ever."
"Best anniversary ever so far," I corrected. Scarlett laughed.
"You are one of a kind, Asha Donovan."
She stood on tiptoes and gave me a soft kiss.
"I love you."
"I love you too." I kissed her back, my heart giving a heavy thump of agreement. More than anything else in this world. I didn't always appreciate the way other people said my full name, like I was a brand and a commodity instead of a person. But when Scarlett said it, she said it like she saw every piece of me, the good and the bad, and she loved me because of, not despite, the different facets of my character. I'd been surrounded by money and fame for most of my adult life. but this, right here, with Scarlet happy and content in my arms? This was all I truly needed. Epilogue number one. A deal.
Welcome to the Black Castle Book Club's official group chat.
Seriously, you put a picture from The Land Before Time as the group's profile picture. A deal.
Why not? It's a good movie.
Stevens. Dude, that's so wrong. It's a children's film and we're reading about dinosaurs boning. A deal.
It's a good thing we're not making them read the books, isn't it?
A deal.
But fine, I see your point.
A deal.
I wanted to keep it a surprise, but since you insist on policing my admin decisions, I've changed the picture to the cover of this month's Book Club Pick.
A deal.
Gentlemen, prepare yourselves for, drumroll please, Shagging the Spinosaurus.
Vincent. We already guessed that was the book of the month. We saw you reading it the other day. Aren't you supposed to read it with the rest of the club? Why are you reading it early? Stevens.
Yeah, that's cheating.
A deal.
It's called vetting. Also, I'm the admin. I can do what I want.
Samson.
I tried looking for it at the bookstore yesterday and couldn't find it. Donovan, what was the name of the store you went to?
I don't remember. Just some shop I stumbled on in the city. I'm sure you can buy the book online. Gallagher.
I don't understand. How do you shag a Spinosaurus?
Stevens.
The same way you shag a Triceratops and a T-Rex, genius.
Gallagher.
Oh, you sound so bloody confident. Are you speaking from experience?
A deal.
Gentlemen, let's get back on track. This is a book club, not a fight club.
A deal.
Our first official meeting is on Wednesday. I want everyone to come prepared with at least one discussion question.
Gallagher.
Dibs on the how do you shag a Spinosaurus question.
A deal.
You can't ask that. It has to be a thoughtful question.
Vincent.
How thoughtful do you want us to be? We're literally reading about dinosaurs fucking.
And humans. If you forget them, that's human erasure.
Vincent. Fuck off, Donovan.
Spoken like someone who doesn't have the IQ to come up with a good question.
Vincent. Yeah? Let's wait until Wednesday and see. I bet my question will be better than yours.
You're on. May the better questioner win. A deal.
Okay, moving on.
A deal.
Noah. Since you refuse to participate in the literary side of our club, you're in charge of snacks.
Noah. Fine. A deal.
I'm thinking we could do a themed event with dinosaur crackers.
A deal.
Do you think they make custom Spinosaurus ones?
Samson.
So we're going to eat the little dude while we read about him getting it on. That's so wrong.
Stevens.
Poor Spinny. He deserves better.
A deal.
It was an idea. I don't see you guys coming up with anything better.
Gallagher.
How about jungle juice to stay with the dinosaur theme?
Vincent.
Dinosaurs didn't live in the jungle.
Gallagher.
How do you know? Were you there?
LOL. Vincent.
Don't talk to your captain like that.
Gallagher.
You're our football captain. You're not the president of this book club.
Gallagher.
Also, I just looked it up and they did live in jungles, so you're wrong.
Samson.
Wait, we have a president.
A deal.
Yes, it's me.
A deal.
Anyway.
A deal.
Noah, can you call the Dinosaur Cracker Company and ask them for custom Spinosaurus snacks?
A deal.
Hello?
A deal.
Noah.
Noah Wilson left the conversation.
Epilogue number two. Asher. 30 seconds of added time left on the clock. Sweat coated my skin and dripped into my eyes. A ceaseless, deafening roar rolled through the stadium as fans shouted for someone, anyone on their side to score. It was our final match of the season. Once again, we were playing Holchester. Once again, we were tied, and once again, we needed a win to take home the trophy. The déjà vu was so strong, it permeated the air and etched lines of determination across every Blackcastle player's face. We'd let last season's Premier League title slip through our fingers, but we would rather die than give Holchester another victory. Not in our bloody stadium, in our city, surrounded by our fans. But she broke through our defence and attempted a goal. My heart stopped in denial, only to pick up again when Vincent streaked in at the last minute with a spectacular block. He kicked the ball to Elliot, who tried to run upfield with it but faced strong resistance from Holchester. Instead of wasting time by fighting, he passed the ball back to Vincent, who took it and ran. 15 seconds left. My blood thundered in my ears, and I tracked Vincent like an eagle as he sprinted along the byline. Come on, come on, come on! I silently urged him to run faster, even as I kept an eye on the opposing team as well. This was our last play. Either it worked or it didn't. And it had to work. 10 seconds left. Vincent finally paused and, without so much as a beat of hesitation, delivered a sumptuous cross so smoothly that Holchester's defence was still scrambling when I raced in to meet it. 5 seconds. I didn't think. I acted on instinct and met the ball with a clean, simple header. The noise that rocked the stadium swelled beneath my skin and filled my lungs as I joined 70,000 people in watching the ball sail toward the goal in seeming slow motion. 4. Holchester's keeper dived. 3. His fingers grazed the ball, but they didn't find purchase. 2. The ball sank into the back of the net. 1. A moment of pure silence. Then the stadium erupted, its roar so deafening that my teeth and bones rattled from the sheer force of it. It built and built, climbing higher and higher, until the very ground seemed to shake beneath the jubilation of tens of thousands of fans celebrating Blackcastle's first Premier League victory in 10 years. I stood there, too stunned to move until my team swarmed me with hugs and cheers. We won! Samson shouted, shaking my shoulders. We fucking won! We bloody did it! Take that, wankers! Gallagher yelled, flipping the bird toward the Holchester players at the other end of the pitch. Not very sportsmanlike, but who cared? We won! We won! Exhilaration shattered Shock's hold on me. I finally joined in the celebrations, my heart full to bursting as I hugged and clapped my teammates on the back. After all the shit we'd been through and all the obstacles we'd faced, we were bringing home the trophy. Christ, it felt good. More than good. It was euphoric. Laughter rumbled through my chest when the team hoisted me and Vincent on their shoulders. From this vantage point, I spotted our exultant club staff on the sidelines with Coach, who wore his first real smile since 1995. Good thing you didn't screw that up, Vincent shouted over the noise. His face gleamed with a mix of perspiration and elation. If you had, I would have banished you from the team myself. Like you have the power, I shouted back. I flipped him off, laughing again when the team set us down and Vincent attacked me with a bear hug. Fuck you, Donovan, he yelled in my ear, but he was grinning. We all were. Well, all of us except Holchester, whose members skulked off the pitch with their heads down. Butchie shot me a baleful glare on his way out. He was already in hot water with Holchester execs after he got caught street racing last month. His arrest had resulted in a hefty fine and a 12-month driving ban, and there were rumours his stay on the team was dependent on him winning another league title this year. I didn't know what would happen to him now, and I didn't care. I was focused on finding someone more important. Vincent went off to sing our team's anthem with Adele and Stevens while I scanned the stadium. Finding her should have been impossible, given how many people were jumping and running about. But I spotted her almost immediately. Even if there were 700,000 instead of 70,000 people here, I would have found her just as easily, because a part of me would always be connected to a part of her. Scarlett sat on the north side with Corina, Brooklyn, and my parents. My heart stopped for the second time that day. I blinked to make sure I was seeing correctly, but there was no mistaking my mother's curly dark hair and my father's grizzled beard. They hadn't said a word about attending today's match. But there they were, decked out in Black Castle gear, even my father. My mother beamed and waved when she saw me looking. My father didn't smile or wave, but his short nod was the most affirmation I'd gotten from him since I transferred. I doubted we would ever have a normal father-son relationship, but it had improved incrementally since his surprise visit to kick my ass into gear during the fall. Plus, the fact that he was here today in Black Castle colours, that meant more than anything else he could have done. I swallowed the emotion in my throat. If I teared up on the pitch, I would never live it down, and refocused on Scarlett. She grinned and blew me a kiss with one hand. Her other hand carried a sign that said, "Kick Holchester's ass from here to Pluto," in huge, bright purple letters. I burst into laughter. God, I loved that woman. I winked and blew her a kiss back. It was cheesy as fuck, but I didn't care how many people groaned or how many front pages it would land on tomorrow. I meant it with all my heart.
Scarlett. Do you think the logo was always there, or he had someone install it after you guys won? I asked, staring at the giant Black Castle logo etched into the foyer floor. Asher laughed.
I have no idea. This is my first time here. I've never even met Markovic before.
It was the week after Black Castle's historic league win. The first under coach Frank Armstrong and the first under its current owner, Vuk Markovic. And Markovic had invited the entire club for a celebration at his mansion outside London. Either he'd been extremely confident about the team's ability to win, or he spent an inordinate amount of money to host such a lavish party on such short notice. He could certainly afford it. The billionaire CEO possessed a higher net worth than some small European countries. He lived in New York, but owned multiple interests in the UK, including Markovic Stadium, and he was notoriously reclusive. According to the internet, he rarely, if ever, spoke in public. Given his reputation, I was surprised he was hosting such an elaborate party, but winning the Premier League was a big deal. As the team owner, he had to thank the players somehow.
It's about time you two showed up.
Vincent appeared out of seemingly nowhere. Like the rest of the men, he wore a tuxedo to fit in with the black tie theme.
I can't believe you made me the early one out of our trio. Do you have any idea what that'll do to my fashionably late reputation?
I patted his shoulder with a comforting hand. Punctuality is a good thing. Embrace it.
We would have gotten here earlier, but we got distracted.
Asher added, swiping two pieces of baked shrimp toast off a passing service platter. He handed me one and popped the other in his mouth. My brother visibly gagged.
Don't ever say stuff like that in front of me again. I'm going to be sick.
Asher raised an eyebrow. He chewed and swallowed before saying casually,
I was talking about the injured bird we saved from the side of the road. What were you talking about?
I laughed and nudged Asher gently with my elbow. Stop teasing him. You two play nice while I say hi to Brooklyn. My friend stood on the other side of the domed entryway, talking to another Black Castle staff member. The foyer represented only a sliver of the Markovic estate, which was vast enough to fit multiple football pitches with a room left over for an American baseball field or two, but it was still five times as big as my flat. The aforementioned gold stallion team logo gleamed against an expanse of pale green marble while chandeliers dripped with heavy teardrop-shaped crystals above. It would probably take me 10 minutes just to reach Brooklyn, especially given how many people were here. Besides the Black Castle team and their dates, I spotted a few celebrities and socialites, including Paulina, the model I'd caught kissing Asher over the summer. She came with Gallagher, but judging by the way she kept scanning the room, she was on the lookout for someone else.
I'll say hi to Brooklyn with you.
Vincent moved to follow me before I stopped him with a hand on his chest. Don't even think about it. I warned.
Think about what?
He was the picture of innocence. She is not going to go for you. Even if she did, her father wouldn't. The boss will literally murder you with his bare hands if you so much as breathe wrong near her.
Please, I don't have a death wish,
Vincent said.
I just want to talk to her because I lent her the latest Isabella Valencia book and I want it back.
My brother did not read thrillers. You don't own... My eyes narrowed. Wait, you mean my Isabella Valencia book? The one I haven't read yet? I was looking all over for it the other day. Vincent shrugged, having the grace to look sheepish. Unbelievable. This was like the Adele Vinyl situation all over again.
Anyway, I'm not interested in her like that,
he said.
I admit I was intrigued when I first met her, but she's annoying.
Because she's the one woman not related to you who doesn't fall all over you. And Karina doesn't count. She's basically your de facto sister.
No, it's because she's annoying.
You used to think Asha was annoying, and now you're best friends. Vincent's mouth curled.
Best friends is pushing it. We tolerate each other. I'm standing right here,
Asha interjected.
Buddy's right. We tolerate each other for the team and for you. That's it.
Uh-huh. They tolerated each other so much, they were going to watch the upcoming Nate Reynolds movie without me, but whatever. I wasn't bitter or anything. Sure, well, tolerate each other while I say hi to Brooklyn. Alone. I left them to bicker with each other while I joined my friend next to one of the Picassos. The other staff member had left, leaving her by herself. I don't know how you do it, she said. She must have been watching my interaction with Asher and Vincent. Dealing with those two together is like dealing with children. Tell me about it. I hugged her hello. You look great. So do you. Brooklyn grinned. It's too bad Karina couldn't come. This place is wild. Did you know there's a shooting range in the back garden? No. How did you know that? People tell me things. She shrugged. Her gaze coasted over my shoulder, and her eyes widened, with appreciation or apprehension, I couldn't tell. Speaking of people, look who's here. I turned as the lively chatter in the foyer faded into silence, and the only sound was the clack of shoes against marble. He emerged from the shadows of another room and stopped at the edge of the crowd. I recognized him from my internet sleuthing immediately. Vuk Markovic. I thought his photos were intimidating, but they didn't do him justice. In person, he was downright terrifying. It wasn't his size or the vicious scar bisecting his face into two icy halves. It wasn't the unsmiling mouth, the burn marks around his throat, or those pale blue, almost colorless eyes. It was the sense of danger he emitted, like a predator dressed in sheep's clothing. Even in a custom 10,000-pound tux, he didn't look like a CEO. He looked like someone who would calmly and efficiently dismember you with his bare hands if you crossed him. A chill skittered down my spine when those unsettling eyes brushed over me. But they didn't pause. They simply skimmed over me like I didn't exist. He scanned the room without a hint of emotion. It seemed like he was searching for someone. But whoever it was must not have been there because his mouth thinned with displeasure. An older woman came up beside him and whispered something in his ear. He nodded and walked toward the boss, breaking the spell of silence that had descended upon his arrival. The room released a collectively held breath, and chatter picked up again. I guess he's not going to give a thank you speech, I said wryly. He's hot. My head snapped toward her. Who, Markovic? Yeah. In a scary, I might kill you after I fuck you sort of way, but it works. What? She said defensively when I arched my eyebrows. I have a thing for bad boys. Sometimes you worry me. I always do, she said with more cheer than the situation warranted. She glanced over my shoulder again, a small smile creeping onto her face. But I think you'll feel much better soon. What?
I hate to interrupt, but do you mind if I steal Scarlet away?
Asha's smooth voice interjected along with a hand on my hip.
I have something important I need to show her.
Brooklyn smacked. I'm sure you do. Heat scalded my face. Get your mind out of the gutter. Nah, it's a fun place to be, but I can take a hint. She winked at us on her way to say hi to Adil. Have fun. What's this important thing you need to show me? I asked Asha suspiciously as he led me around the edge of the entryway toward the main part of the house. It's not your dick, is it? His chuckle rose over the din, teasing my senses.
Not necessarily, but if you want to see it.
My blush deepened. I've seen it plenty. I don't need... What are you doing? I squealed out a laugh and Asha pulled me into a dark room off the foyer and locked the door behind us.
Stealing some time alone with my girlfriend.
He lifted me onto one of the side tables and stepped in between my legs.
I'm tired of sharing you with other people.
We were apart for 10 minutes max, and we see each other every day. I officially moved into Ash's house last month after the lease on my flat expired. It was a huge step, but it was also a natural progression of our relationship.
True,
he conceded.
But 10 minutes is too long, and every day isn't enough.
You're impossible, I said with another laugh. Even so, Mr. Markovitch is going to be very upset if he finds out we're desecrating his... My voice trailed off for a second and my breath hitched when Ash's hand slid up my leg. Whatever this room is. Drawing room? Living room? Sitting room? My muddled brain noticed chairs and tables, but the bulk of my attention had diverted toward the graze of Ash's fingers against my thigh.
I just won Mr. Markovitch his first Premier League title in a decade.
Asher lowered his head, his velvety murmur making me shiver.
I think he'll give me some grace.
My resistance gradually melted like snow beneath the sun as he feathered kisses along my jaw. I don't know, I breathed. He seems pretty unforgiving. Do you think he's... I swallowed as Asher's hand found the lace edge of my knickers. Do you think he's actually in business, or... I gasped, my words dissolving into a burst of pleasure when he slipped his fingers beneath the lace and found my slick arousal. Asher kissed his way back up to my mouth.
Scarlet.
Yes.
I don't want to talk about Markovitch or anything else right now.
Heat fluttered between my legs. So what do you want to do instead? His grin was pure wickedness in the dark.
Why tell you?
He drawled, sinking to his knees.
When I could show you.
Those were the last words we exchanged for the next half hour. I had no idea if people were looking for us, or if Markovitch would be upset about us defiling his drawing-slash-living-slash-sitting-room. If they were, and he was, we'd deal with it together. We always did. For now, I allowed myself to abandon my worries and sink into the pleasure of the moment. The past was the past, and the future was unpredictable. But the present, it belonged to us, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you for listening to The Striker, Gods of the Game, Book 1, written by Anna Huang, narrated by Shane East, a SAG-AFTRA member, and Stella Hunter, produced by One Night Stand Studios, post-production by Kyle Verville of One Night Stand Studios, text copyright 2024 by Anna Huang, production copyright 2024 by Anna Huang. All rights reserved.